Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. It is a Monday morning, and on Monday mornings now, we do our movie reviews, we catch up on the box office, and we do it with Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. We review all the new movies and take a look at your box office for the weekend and see how well or how poorly movies did just this past weekend. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter and at Facebook.com/NickDShow, which is the best way to stay connected with us. So let's get the box office going and get the movie reviews going. And let's say hello first to Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Welcome. So let's talk about the box office. Interesting. You put together, Eric, you put together a box office report every week, which kind of talks about, you know, the big movies of the week and then dissects them as well. So the movie of the week, the number one movie of the week was Focus with $19.1 million. But the actual fact is that Will Smith just doesn't pull in the box office as much as he used to, correct?
No. I think we're at the point where we might be looking at After Earth as sort of the moment when things sort of changed for Big Willie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, After Earth is a horrible movie. But I mean, he started to. What was his last bit? I mean, was I Am Legend was like in 2007, right?
Yeah,
and that was that was a huge movie, and made a massive amount of money at the box office when it first opened the opening weekend.
Yeah, but actually, Men in Black 3 did tremendously well. It did very well here in the States, and actually did tremendous business worldwide too. So
really,
with the sequel and all.
Wow.
But it did tremendous. And even Hancock did very well. It seemed like, you know, any time you put Will Smith with any sort of sci-fi-ish type storyline, the people show up.
Wow. Okay.
Except after Earth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was just, you know, I was just telling Dan this when we were riding in a little bit earlier about how, like, I don't know why, but I found it immensely entertaining that in the commercials for Focus, it was like, experience it in IMAX.
Yeah.
It's a con man movie. You know,
I like Margot Robbie as much as the next
guy.
Well,
sure.
And that's really the only reason I could see even attempting to see it in IMAX.
But it's like go see The Sting in 3D.
Right.
You know, it's like, what are we talking about, man?
I don't know. I don't know why Warner Brothers feels the need to book. Maybe they just were so used to Will Smith being in a certain type of movie. They're just like, oh, yeah, book it in IMAX.
Right.
George, it's a con man movie.
So what are his biggest hits? What are Will Smith's biggest hits? I mean, Independence Day probably is number one.
Yeah, Independence Day, I Am Legend, you know, Hancock, even all the Men in Black movies all did fairly well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, that came in at number one. Number two is Kingsman: The Secret Service, which made $11.7 million. Did you expect that to stay up in there, or
I thought it was going to drop a little bit. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of competition in the last few weeks, but it's held pretty well.
Yeah, which is surprising, I think. I mean,
there's an interesting statistic. I think we mentioned maybe a couple weeks ago that it opened over President's Day weekend, and it opened to less than $45 million over the holiday. And there have been only three movies in history that have open to less than $45 million over that weekend and still made $100 million in the U.S. and that's where it's sort of headed for.
Mm.
So,
well, it's up to 85.6 now.
Yeah, and it's probably going to just squeak by $100 million here in the U.S. So,
well, I mean, I think that's surprising. I didn't think this thing was going to make any money.
I didn't know exactly how well it was going to do. I thought it did better than it expected over that holiday.
Yeah.
It's held up pretty well, but I think it's sort of You know, word of mouth apparently is pretty decent on it, and there just really hasn't been anything opening in its wake that have really, you know, inspired people to forget about it.
Yeah, all right. Number three, boy, the SpongeBob movie. Wow.
Yeah, doing well.
$11.2 million, bringing its total of over $140 million. Who would have thought that?
No, not me. No.
I don't know. It's pretty crazy. Is it? I mean, there's obviously nothing else out for kids, right?
No. I mean, the next thing to come out, and that's not still for a couple more weeks, is Cinderella.
Right.
So it's still got at least a week and a half to, you know, make some more money. It's at a point where it's close to making double what the first film made.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy. Isn't there an animated movie coming out in a couple of weeks? Doesn't like am I nuts or does
oh yeah, Home at the
Home,
end
yeah.
of end of March.
Yeah, that actually looks really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the trailer for that, and that's DreamWorks.
Yeah,
that's from DreamWorks.
They pushed it back. It was supposed to open during the holidays, like end of November last year, and they pushed it to March. I think probably just to get it out of the way of Big Hero 6 and whatever else was going on at that time.
Now, the next Pixar.
I was going to say, I feel like I've been seeing the trailer for this one for about a year now.
Yeah.
Now, the next.
But push back a little.
The next Pixar movie, I think, looks fantastic.
Inside Out.
Oh, man. I think it looks awesome. Which Pixar people are responsible for that one?
It's one of the good ones, I think.
Yeah. Colin, do you know, Colin?
What they did.
Pete Docter and Ronaldo Del Carmen.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
He did the first Monsters, Inc. movie.
That's right, yeah.
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 You know, the trailer for that one, when I heard the premise of that movie, you know, however long ago, I thought it sounded really fantastic, and this might be the one that gets Pixar back on track. The trailers, for me, don't do it.
Oh, really?
No, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It looks too kidsy about it that I mean maybe you know it's just a trailer could be you know not showing much but I don't know there's just something looks very uninspired about
it. I don't know. I mean I think it looks great and I really love the premise. I think I'm hoping it does well. Is that a summer film?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, June.
All right. Number four, 50 Shades of Grey with $10.9 million, bringing its total up to $147 million. I think it's kind of funny that the SpongeBob movie is going to make more money than 50 Shades of Grey, ultimately.
Well, it's close. It's like $7 million behind 50 Shades right now, but now it's leapfrogged it in the placement of the box office.
Yeah.
So I think 50 Shades of Grey is dropping obviously a lot faster than SpongeBob did.
Sure.
So SpongeBob could still squeak out, you know, beating it eventually.
Well, not only that, but if you look at it though, SpongeBob has a lot more half price tickets purchased than 50 Shades of Grey because kids aren't going to see 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, you know,
yeah,
kids grow up fast.
Number five, The Lazarus Effect with $10.6 million for its opening weekend. Number six is McFarland USA. $7.7 million. Number seven, American Sniper with $7.7 million, bringing its total up to $331 million. Wow.
Almost the number one film of 2014, technically.
Unbelievable. Eight is The Duff, which I know you absolutely loved.
Hated.
$7.1 million. Number nine, Still Alice got a little boost because Julianne Moore won the Oscar. $2.6 million, bringing its total up to 11. And then, Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Wow, is that a bomb? $2.4 million, bringing its 2-week total to $10 million.
Yeah, not a huge budget on that thing, but $10 million at the box office, it's not good really for anybody. Alice has made more money, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean that's crazy. So what do you make of this weekend? What are you looking at here? I mean, in terms of like the box office for this week.
Well, the big story is the Will Smith numbers. I mean, you can all the commercials this week are probably going to brag that Focus is number one, but $19 million for Will Smith when that's a movie that's quite possibly might not end up making $50 million.
Yeah.
Which is really bad for a Will Smith movie. And I know that this isn't a sci-fi movie, the kind of thing that usually draws in Will Smith fans. But you can see how Warner Brothers sort of even shifted the advertising on the film from sort of like slick con man movie to where it looked like it was going to be like Hitch 2.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really shifted the advertising on this thing, and you can see why.
Yeah, it's true. It's crazy. Now, does he have anything? Does he have like any big ones coming up? Does he have a movie coming out at all this year, like in the summer or the big season?
No, he's got a movie coming out at Christmas called Concussion, which is a story of the cover up of concussions in the NFL.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, is he part of like an ensemble? That sounds more like an ensemble driven piece than just like.
It's definitely an ensemble movie, but I think he's got top billing in it. I don't know exactly who he plays in the film, but it's a big ensemble cast.
Okay. All right, so Focus.
Cast too.
Yeah, well, who else is in it, Colin? Who else is in it?
I'm looking at Alec Baldwin, Paul Reiser, Robert Brooks, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Luke Wilson. It's pretty Howard. Interesting cast.
I wonder if Paul Reiser is going to put raisinets in his popcorn in that movie.
Who directed it, Colin? I think someone.
It's Peter Landsman who directed Parkland.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and suddenly gets less interesting.
All right, you guys, hang on.
I remember reading Will Smith saying he's not, going to seek out the sci-fi blockbusters anymore. He's take a little turn with his career. Mm. That's what I remember reading. So,
well, let's see what happens.
He's going to be going back to sequel land pretty quick.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to experience it in IMAX. you guys hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we got Colin, we got Eric, and we got movies. We just talked about the box office. Focus made $19 million, but disappointing in the history of the numbers that Will Smith usually brings in. We shall take a break, and we've got movies to talk about. 312-981-7200. All the new movie reviews are coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out for a little while after 5 with Steve Cochran and the gang. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also text us to that number as well. Every Monday morning, we take a look at the box office, we analyze the big movies of the week, and then we review the new movies. We do that with Eric Childress and Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. They also write for RogerEbert.com, and we welcome the gentleman back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Hello.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Wild Tales?
All right. Well, this was one of the Academy Award nominees for Best Foreign Language Film. And it's actually an anthology film from Argentina. It's a series of short films, all from the same director, all with different casts, and they all have sort of a unifying theme of maybe a few unifying themes, but mainly like losing control. It's like the late unifying theme with this one. The first story takes place on an airplane. Every passenger sort of realizes they have one thing in common, and I will not give that away. There's another story about road rage between two guys that goes way out of control. The story about a waitress who's serving a man that she recognizes as a man who wronged her father. Another story about a rich couple who learned that their teenage son ran down a pregnant woman the night before and how they figure out that problem. The last one takes place at a wedding and how the married couple deal with infidelity on a really extreme scale. And I'm being purposely vague about all these descriptions because, it's watching these stories unfold, here's the thing about this film. It's hard to describe because it's boring at all. But the problem with these stories is that they lack a certain of cleverness to them that I kind of kept waiting to kick in. They seemed they all kind of lacked having some kind of a twist, with few exceptions, that really make them wholly unique. The stories feel a little bit half-baked. By the end of most of the segments of this film, I just kind of kept thinking, "What? Really? That's it? That's the end? That's okay?" I program short films for our film festival that's coming up,
yeah.
And with a lot of these, I don't think I would program them. that's kind of a main problem with this film is that, it wants to be a sort of send up about human unpredictability and, you know, the kind of nihilistic message about human behavior. But by the end of the movie, I just kind of thought, okay, what's the point? You know, but again, it's not boring. You won't be bored by this film. But I left unsatisfied with it.
Were you surprised that it had been nominated for Best Foreign Film?
I had heard a lot of people loved it, so I might be in the minority. I am in the minority of this film, so I wasn't that surprised. I mean, it is the kind of film that it's not the kind of film that gets nominated for Best Foreign Film. The other four films are the kinds of films that get
that
get nominated.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of a surprise that it had legs. But at the same time, I wouldn't be, you know, if I watched the movie on a screener, so I wouldn't surprise me if an audience watched it and was, you know, kind of having a good time
right.
with it. So on one hand, I guess, I don't know. I don't recommend the film. It wasn't for me. But again, I'm in the minority.
Okay. And it's out of Argentina, by the way. And
yeah.
All right. And Eric, what do you think?
Well, Colin, you're not so much in the minority on this one. And not only am I surprised that I got nominated for foreign language film, I'm surprised that so many people love it as much as they do. And that being said, I think I like some of the segments a little bit more than Colin did. I think that the opening segment on the airplane, I think, is dynamite. And I think builds up to that sort of the great twist. And it's so nutty that when you open the movie with something so nutty, you're setting the bar ridiculously high for a film that then sort of, you know, spits and sputters its way through the rest of the stories. I like the road rage story pretty well. There's a story involving a guy who's constantly fighting the government and their parking conditions that I think, builds up to a lot of potential, but then just kind of gets anticlimactic. Particularly the story about the family whose son hit a pedestrian, I think is a really well-structured thing that just builds up to kind of nothing. And then the wedding segment at the end just seems to go on forever, and it's just completely just not interesting from the get-go. So, yeah, I mean, I think I liked some of the individual moments more than Colin did, but as a whole, if we're just sort of, you know, adding, you know, which positive to negative just on the individual segments alone, I was more negative than positive. So it's like a 2.5-star review, but still, a negative.
Okay. All right. I haven't seen it.
I agree that first segment is pretty great, and I was right on board with it from that point on. Anticlimactic is the word that I meant to use, and that's very true for this film. It's only playing in three theaters. It's playing at the Landmark Century, it's playing at River East, and it's playing at the Evanston. So
okay. All right, so that's Wild Tales, and Colin, Eric, both not crazy about it, although it does have some things in it that that they enjoyed. I understand that neither of you saw The Lazarus Effect?
No.
Okay,
no.
Well, then I guess I got to take care of it.
All right.
So The Lazarus Effect is a new horror film that is from the director of the guy who made a documentary about sushi. He made a food movie, which is David Gelb is his name. So he doesn't seem like the likeliest of people to direct a horror film.
Well, and she is like eating dead people.
Well, so. Okay, if you want to go that way. Yeah. And it's got like a crazy good cast that you would not expect to be in a February released horror movie. Mark Duplass is in it. Olivia Wilde, they play a couple, and along with other students, they are experimenting with bringing the dead back to life, a serum that could bring the dead back to life. They experiment on the dog. They bring a dog back to life, and that has very mixed connotations. As you can imagine, any movie that's about, you know, resurrecting the dead in any kind of way. I mean, we've all seen Reanimator multiple times, and we see what happened in that movie. But this is sort of a PG-13 movie about resurrecting the dead. And what happens is Olivia Wilde gets electrocuted. I'm not giving anything away. This is in the commercials, for God's sake. So they bring Olivia Wilde. They use the serum to bring Olivia Wilde back to life. And then all hell breaks loose after that. I got to say, this was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I expected absolute trash. But this is a pretty well-made film. And it's certainly a very well-acted movie. The performances here deserve a better script. But I did not hate this movie. There are some genuine, you know, creepy moments in it. I think Olivia Wilde is very, very scary in it and kind of cool. And there were things about it that I really, really enjoyed. It's not perfect. It doesn't cover anything that we haven't covered a million times in a million other horror movies that deal with, you know, bringing the dead back to life or that just deal with... you know, horror cliches in general. But I thought it was actually pretty well directed. It's really nicely photographed, and it was just a lot better than I expected. I guess because my expectations were so low that I enjoyed this movie a lot more than I thought I would. So I didn't hate it, and I wouldn't discourage people if you want to see like a sort of a creepy little PG-13 horror movie. You could do a lot worse than the Lazarus Effect, and I realize that that's not the most glowing recommendation of all time, but I liked it. I actually kind of liked it. So I did, you know. So the Lazarus Effect. If you want to, you know, go out and see a horror film, you could do a lot worse. And I really did like Olivia Wilde. I'm starting to like Olivia Wilde more now. I have no idea why, because I never really liked her in anything until a few movies ago.
Till Drinking Buddies.
She's so good in Drinking Buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the weird thing about this is that it's like it's got that, you know, like it's got like cast members from the mumblecore
yeah.
movement. You know what I mean? Like the weird yeah. indie movement movies, and yeah. they're in this big budget. Well, it's not a big budget. I mean, this is a small budget, obviously. What did they spend on this movie? Like
a little over $3 million.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Then that makes sense while they're in this movie. I was surprised by how much I kind of enjoyed it. There was nobody in the theater when I saw it. Mm. It was like me and six other people, and two of them were asleep. But I don't know. I thought it was okay. So if you're in the mood for, you know, some PG-13 horror, you could do a lot worse than the Lazarus Effect, which I think will probably do better on VOD and DVD. So anyway, all right, you guys take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right. When we come back, we got more movies to talk about, including Will Smith's new film, Focus, and we also have. A movie with the guys from the Flight of the Conchords made a vampire comedy called What We Do in the Shadows. So we have that coming up as well, and we'll take a quick break and come back and talk more about that on 720 WGN. Yeah. Hi, everybody. Nick DiCilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. My dad will tell a joke a little bit later in the show. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. But right now we're doing the movie reviews. Eric and Colin join me every Monday morning. We talk about the box office, and then we review the new movies. We got a couple more to review, including Will Smith's new one. Eric, Colin, welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Eric, tell us about Focus.
Okay, this is the new film starring Will Smith. and it stars Will Smith as a con man who, as the movie opens, is almost conned himself, but being the experienced pro that he is, he's clearly able to recognize when he's being conned, and the person responsible for that is played by Margot Robbie, who played Leonardo DiCaprio's wife in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Good Lord.
Thank you. And she knows how to pick a pocket, and she knows her way around the sort of the generalities of the con, but she's not really good exactly at pulling off the end game. So Will Smith sees some potential in her, or at least a really pretty face, and decides to sort of show her the ropes a little bit and shows her into this elaborate con system that him and a number of people down in New Orleans have put together. It basically involves a lot of pickpockets, a lot of identity thievery, and so on. So the first half of the movie is sort of him showing her the ropes and putting her through various different cons. And then the movie sort of takes a leap forward that you see in the commercials where the two of them, now separated through time, are actually involved in working the con of a race car pro owner, who is looking to sort of con his competition and hires Will Smith to be a part of this operation. And needless to say, know that he's actually dating Margot Robbie's character. So here you have the setup, sort of a classic con artist movie setup where you're expecting a lot of twists and turns and who's conning who and, you know, when's the other shoe going to drop on all the double turns and twists and things that this movie is going to have in store. And the truth be told is that there's really, if that's what you're looking for, you're really not going to get anything like that. Instead, you have a movie where it's part con artist movie and part Will Smith being a puppy dog and falling in love with Margot Robbie. And this is an element that the film has a lot of trouble in reconciling. When it's dealing with the con artist stuff, it's very slick. It's very fast moving, even though it lacks a general sense of fun and sort of this discovery the way some other con artist movies, obviously The Sting we mentioned earlier, and just about anything David Mamet has done throughout time. And the thing is that, you know, most of these con artist movies that we've had in the past and movies that we've really liked, and there's a lot of really good con artist movies, is that the con artists that we're usually following are either A, interesting, or B, fun in a way that the people that they're conning are usually bigger jerks or rich people that we don't mind being built out of the money.
Know, here's the thing, man. You can't top conning Robert Shaw. That's right. That's just the best,
right,
man.
Yeah, and obviously that's, you know, if that's like the number one thing, then, you know, Focus is like 116,000.
Right.
And part of the reason of that, the reason that this movie sets itself to fail real early is that Will Smith and his gang really should be the bad guys. You know, in an era where identity theft is sort of a major thing, yeah, and it's probably affected, you know, a couple of us on this phone line here. That to watch people's, you know, your average Joe's gets their pockets taken and cons run on them is really kind of, you know, crappy.
To
be said.
Yeah.
So you really don't like the Will Smith character from the get-go, and then to sort of watch him go through this transformation where he goes from, you know, the slick Will Smith guy to a guy that looks like he's choking on a turnip every time he falls in love with Margot Robbie. He's got this look on his face that, it's just not very good acting by Will Smith.
Yeah.
And none of the chemistry between them is completely absent, and Robbie's character, without giving anything away here, is really a twit from frame one to frame 137,000. There's no interesting arc to the story. There's sort of one really obvious twist, again, without giving anything away to anyone who's probably seen Maverick. But so, yeah, this is, I thought this movie was really dumb. Not very clever, and pretty poorly acted to boot.
Okay. All right, Colin?
Yeah, I didn't dislike it quite as much, Derek, but he touched on a bunch of things that I definitely agree with. First of all, the anti-hero thing, which is something I have no problem going along with the film, but like Eric said, when your con artists aren't so much con artists as they are identity thieves and pickpockets, then you've lost me. I'm not going to for an identity thief because I've been the victim of it.
Yeah.
A long time ago, and it ain't fun, and it ain't cool, and I'm not on board with that. And pickpockets, and you know, just robbing innocent people, you know, who haven't really done anything wrong. That's also something I'm kind of not on board with the anti-hero thing. And some of the cons that the one big con in the center of the film, not in the third act, but the one that they set up at a football game. Is just so ridiculously elaborate. I just kept thinking, they're supposed to spend so much money just setting up this con. Did they really get that a return on their
Can I just mention, by the way, really quickly, is it one of the major problems that my friend, you guys all know Scott Oaken, with any of the big heist movies is, like, how much money did these guys spend to do this? Like, I remember I was sitting in we were in Bruinview, and we were watching Die Hard with a Vengeance, and he's like, "What the hell, man? How much?" There's like 80 trucks and equipment. What did they spend? You know, I mean, what's the profit on this?
Well, at least you know that's one of the great things about Ocean's 11, the Soderbergh film, is that the first thing that they do is actually get a financier on board to fund the thing.
Right, exactly. All right, go ahead, Colin.
Right. But really, this movie wants to be, it so wants to be Elmore Leonard. It so wants to be Out of Sight, you know. It wants that wit, that sexiness, and those kinds of twists and turns. The problem is, you know, we've all seen way too many con movies over the past few years. We know not to trust anybody or anything. But when somebody finally reveals themselves in the third act, it's not that big of a shock.
Right.
But I will say I disagree. I do think Will Smith and Margot Robbie, I think there is chemistry there. I just don't think this is the right script for them. I do find them to be an appealing couple. And I think the movie does have a few fun moments in it. It just doesn't take off because I don't think it's written with the kind of sophistication that a con artist movie needs to really or the kind of cleverness and fun to really buy. But I was just looking at IMDb, and Will Smith and Margot Robbie are going to be together again in another film called Suicide Squad.
That's a Marvel movie, I think.
Big Marvel movie.
It's DC. Okay. Yeah.
DC, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So so they might fare better in that.
Okay.
But yeah, this is a miss for me too.
All right. You guys hang on, okay? I'll give you my review, and then we've got to talk about the vampire comedy that came out this week. Everybody hang on. Eric Childress is with us, and so is Colin Suter, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about I'll give you my review of Focus, and then we'll talk about what I think is a pretty funny movie called What We Do in the Shadows. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WG. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's a Monday morning. My dad is going to tell a joke. We are also going to talk about a best guest guest performances on television shows. So not a regular, but a guest performance. And, you know, they give Emmys out for that, for people who are guest acting on shows. I happen to really enjoy this show called The Slap. And episode 3 just aired this past week, and I watched it. And Blythe Danner made a guest appearance on it, and she was spectacularly good. And so was Uma Thurman, and by the way. They put her through the ringer in this episode, and we're going to talk about the best of those appearances, guest appearances on TV shows. But right now we're in the middle of reviewing all the new movies, and Eric and Colin are here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. So Focus. I'm with you guys. I'm closer to Eric than I am with Colin. I didn't think it was a very good film. I thought a lot of it was just really ridiculously sort of complex but not clever. It just didn't have the fun that I like to see in sort of the con movies. I did, however, enjoy enjoy the scenes between Will Smith and B.D. Wong. That to me was absolutely the best stuff in the movie. That was the most fun. I was really disappointed because these guys who made this movie, it just seems an odd. They've made three movies that are complete. Actually, the first movie that they made is about conning.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, I guess. The first movie they made, what the hell was the name of the movie? I Love You, Philip Morris. Okay, so that did have like a huge con in it. So does this one. But the one that they made in between, which I love, is Crazy Stupid Love. And I love that movie. And it does have a big twist. The other thing is that these guys do make movies with twists in them.
Yeah.
And sometimes those reveals are great, and sometimes not so much in this case and in the Philip Morris case. But in Crazy Stupid Love, the reveal in the final third of that movie had no business working.
That's why this thing is so weird to me, knowing that these guys have directed two con artist movies.
Yeah.
And the best twist they pulled off is in the rom-com with Steve Carell.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I remember really seriously when I first saw Crazy Stupid Love, like when that moment happens, and I know the movie's been out for a while already. It's a few years old. I still won't give it away.
Right.
But when that moment happens, it literally made my jaw drop. I was like, what?
I remember an entire row of critics actually crazily surprised at that moment.
No, I was probably sitting in the room with you. And I just remember like, what? I couldn't believe it. And when I watch the movie to this day, and I watch it, and that's one of those movies that, you know, I call a remote dropper, because whenever that movie is on cable, I will watch it. I love that movie, and everybody in it is so great and so funny and so point on. And I remember that when that moment, the reveal happens at the little backyard party thing, I was like, why? And nothing approaches that level in either of the Con Man movies that they've
made. No.
So I don't know. I just found this really sort of pedestrian and not very good. And I was, you know, I'm not a huge Will Smith fan. I didn't hate it. You know, like the last couple of movies he's made, I've absolutely hated. But you know, like that's not a great way to recommend a movie. I didn't hate it. Yeah. So, but not very good. All right, Eric, tell everybody about what we do in the shadows.
Okay, this is a comedy from Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi. It's a film that's been around the film festival circuit for a little over a year now. For quite a while, it's been out there circulating, and it's sort of a mockumentary about vampires, a house full of male vampires who have been around for quite some time. And they're at the point where they're, you know, adjusting to sort of modern life. One of them actually looks like Nosferatu, so he doesn't really leave the house at all. But vampires, you know, have, you know, it's kind of hard to get into nightclubs when you have to be invited in. So this movie is the story of these guys. And they christen a new vampire who becomes one of their new flatmates. And it's just sort of the general story of, you know, them and the other supernatural creatures that exist in the world and how they deal with them and their longstanding feuds and whatnot. It's not a film exactly, you know, plot-driven in any way. It's just, you know, it feeds into, you know, a lot of the really fun mockumentaries that we've had over the years. And I got to say, you know, I was not a big fan of the previous film they did many years ago called Eagle versus Shark.
That was terrible. It was terrible.
Yeah, did not like that one at all. And Taika Waititi, who directed the film, also he did direct a few episodes of Flight of the Conchords that obviously Jemaine Clement is one of the partners, founding members of. But this movie is actually really funny. It's really funny. It might have a few lag spots here and there, but even when you get to those moments, You're often hit with a one-liner or a situation that is just incredibly funny. I know that I'm going to be saying the line, we're werewolves, not swearwolves, for years to come. And there's a line that Jemaine Clement has later in the film about doing his dark bidding that I almost fell out of my chair seeing this movie at South by Southwest last year in the theater. It's on VOD, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's on VOD, and it's I think
it's at the Music Box. Yeah, it's at the Music Box. Yeah.
Yeah, Colin, we've talked about movies, comedies you want to see with an audience. This is a great one to see with an audience because as much as I'd like to stay home VOD, if you can get down in the Music Box to see this thing with a packed house, definitely do it because it's really. Certainly one of the better films in a less than stellar year so far.
Oh, I think it's hilarious. I think it's absolutely hilarious. And I'm a big fan of Flight of the Conchords and I think these guys, do great work, but man, I laughed from beginning to end in this movie. And, I happen to be a huge fan of the vampire genre. And they do a lot of stuff in this movie that has not really been done before. I like the style of it, and there are big, big laughs in this movie. I mean, big, big laughs. And yeah, you're right, Eric. If you can actually see it, with a crowd, do it that way. Colin, I really hope you get a chance to see this one because it's
funny. I had a chance, and they sent me a screener, an online screener for it, and then when I finally had the chance to watch it, they changed the password on me.
Oh, no.
Another one, so yeah.
I hate it when they do that.
First world problem. Yeah.
All right, so those are the big ones. We got Focus, which nobody really liked. Lazarus Effect, which I actually thought was not bad. What We Do in the Shadows, which Eric and I both think is hilarious. And then Wild Tales was the best foreign film nominee that Eric and Colin were not crazy about. Okay, what do we got next week, guys?
We got a lot of stuff next week. We got Chappie. We got Neil Blomkamp's new movie.
Yeah.
We got David Cronenberg's new movie, Maps of the Stars, opens. The second best exotic Marigold Hotel, and Unfinished Business with Vince Vaughn.
Wow. Woof. Wow. remember I sent you a text that said, "What?
Yes.
Did Tom Wilkinson lose a bet?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is he doing in there? I mean, you watch the commercials for
his next indie film or something.
Yeah, because I'm looking at him like, what the hell is Tom Wilkinson doing in this movie? So what? How do you guys feel? Let me ask you guys about this. How do you guys feel about the new Alien movie with Blomkamp directing it?
I'm going to reserve what I think about Blomkamp until after I see Chappie.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a movie that has flipped the advertising this way and, which way in that. It's this movie. And it seems that Neil Blomkamp has a thing, a really common theme through all his movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if that theme continues to the Alien movie, then I expect the plot of the movie is going to be that Alien teams up with the aliens to overthrow Weyland-Yutani.
All right. Well, in the first Alien, there is the Harry Dean Stanton and Yaphet Kotto, they do represent the man. Like, hey, what's going on? How come we're not getting time and a half? You know what I mean?
Truckers in space. So it seems like, the idea of the, I was probably going to go back to that idea. The little man, you got the truckers in the first movie, you got the Marines in the second movie, prisoners in the third. It's right in Blomkamp's wheelhouse.
Just
all of his movies seem to be like the oppressed people, and then there's an outsider that helps the oppressed people, overthrow the government.
Well, are you looking forward to it, Colin? You think it's an interesting choice?
For Alien? Sure. I'm kind of with Eric. When I see Chappie, then we'll know Blomkamp. The thing about Chappie is that I just can't get past is the title. Like, how are we expecting this thing to be a huge blockbuster with that title?
I know.
I was hoping it was going to be a prequel to Iron Eagle, frankly.
Oh, God. Way to pull that one out, Eric.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, you know, think about alien
movies. I'm sort of at the point with alien movies as I am with Terminator movies, where it's like I don't really care if they make another one.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, but apparently they're going to keep making them, and they're going to keep bringing like Ripley, and oh, she's not really dead. It's like, come on, can we just kill? Didn't she die at the end of Alien 3? And didn't the world end at the end of Terminator 3? I mean, why do we have to keep going?
Yeah. I agree. All right, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think, you know, and again, I'm going to hold off until I see Chappie. Right. I also find it interesting that Hugh Jackman is now required to be in every robot movie.
Yeah.
Especially if they box.
Right, so yeah, Chappie's box would completely fall in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But have you seen the latest ads for Chappie, or just kind of show you how off the rails things have gone? Because the latest ads for Chappie state... You know, in District 9, you know, director of District 9, you know, took us to another world. Like, didn't that movie take place on Earth?
It did.
In Africa?
It did, yes.
What other world are they talking about?
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys will have a lot to talk about next week. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Take care. There you go. There's Eric. There's Colin. And they review the movies with me every Monday morning, which we will do again next week on 720 WGN. Plan your home improvement and DIY projects Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11. Hey, wouldn't you love a custom piece of jewelry? You think it would be too expensive, or too difficult, or maybe you don't even know where to begin? Mark Peters Diamond Designs can help. They're experts. Mark gives you options with custom design. If you want it now, find and personalize the perfect ring from their inventory of original designs, or customize a piece by modifying any of their designs and have it made to order. If you're inspired, you can design your own from scratch with their skilled designers. Price point for custom is up to you. You can even sell your old, outdated pieces for double in-store credit and apply it to your new piece. Now is the time to treat yourself to a new family heirloom. If you have questions or to schedule an appointment, call 815-436-2100. Their store is located in Plainfield on Route 59 and 127th Street in Kensington Center, or at markpetersdiamonddesigns.com. With over 23 years of experience in jewelry design, there's only one jeweler you need to know, and that's Mark Peters Diamond Designs.